This is Hackberry House of Chosun, sermonaudio.com. My name is Bob, and today we're looking at Isaiah chapter 28 and following, looking for questions and answers through the Bible, actually, that people kind of skip over, and that I didn't want to skip over, so I'm just stopping at certain places and trying to tackle something that maybe you haven't tried to tackle before. Let's try it, Isaiah chapter 28. Verses 11 and 12, indeed, he, God, will speak to this people through stammering lips and a foreign tongue. He who said to them, here's rest, give rest to the weary, and here is repose, but they would not listen. Wow. Question, how is that passage used in the New Testament? You've probably heard that passage before. Didn't know maybe that it came right here from Isaiah. How did Paul use that passage? Paul speaks of how the gift of tongues is one more way that God tried to speak to his people, Israel, yet to no avail. He says tongues are for a sign to unbelieving Jews, the ones we're talking about here in Isaiah. He quotes Isaiah as proof. Isaiah adds that God would offer them rest from their weariness also, but they would not listen. In the verses preceding and following this passage in Isaiah, Isaiah describes the type of lessons that God has been trying to impart to his people. He speaks in simple, precise statements. And then through miraculous tongues, through the giving of rest. But the hardened hearts remain. The hardened hearts remain. That's my take on Isaiah 28, in case you run across that in the New Testament, want to know why Paul used it. Let's go to chapter 29. We're talking there about Ariel, or Ariel. Woe, O Ariel, Ariel, the city where David once camped. What's that about? Who or what is Ariel? Well, the name means lion-like, lion of God, some say, or heroic. David, the great hero of Israel, once lived there. Ariel, the city where David once camped or lived. But Ariel is only a memory. The lion of God, the heroism of that place is only a memory. Trouble is coming to Ariel. I will bring distress to Ariel, verse 2. She'll be a city of lamenting and mourning, and she'll be like an Ariel to me. Trouble coming. This could be none other than Jerusalem, the city where David camped, which is going to have a lot of trouble, we believe, is Jerusalem. Go ahead and read that chapter and you'll see the trouble that's coming. How about Isaiah 29, same chapter, verse 5. But the multitude of your enemies will become like fine dust. And the multitude of the ruthless ones like the chaff which blows away. And it will happen instantly, suddenly. From the Lord of hosts you'll be punished with thunder and earthquake and loud noise. Okay, trouble coming, as we said earlier. When shall the Ariel prophecies, the prophecies about Jerusalem, when will they be fulfilled, or have they been already? Well, Jerusalem has been destroyed over and over through the years, multiple times. So one could find partial fulfillment of Isaiah's words in every event of destruction down through the years. But in the final attack, and I don't mean 70 AD, as everybody likes to point to, the final attack against the holy city, a whole multitude of nations will be involved. It says in verse 7, and the multitude of all the nations who wage war against Jerusalem, even all who wage war against her and her stronghold and who distress her, will be like a dream. a vision of the night. Jesus spoke of it in his day as still future, and even the AD 70 thing was future in Jesus' day. But even that destruction of AD 70 cannot fulfill this prophecy or Jesus' prophecy, for the text, Matthew 24 now I'm talking about, and others, Mark 13, Luke 21, put all those chapters together, they always in the text flow from the destruction of Jerusalem to the return of Jesus, the end of the world. So once more, I have to do it. I relegate this full, total fulfillment of even Isaiah here to the very end of Earth's history. The promises that follow Ariel's persecution and her persecutor's downfall, that's verses 17 to 24, are very specifically millennial, with the needy of mankind rejoicing in the Holy One of Israel, and ruthless and scornful men being finished. It's definitely not the age in which we live, and there's not ever been an age yet where all the ruthless and scornful men suddenly take a walk. No, it's still coming. It's still coming. I'm going on to chapter 30 now. If you have, number 34, chapter 30. If you have further questions about any of these, and I can well imagine, or just comments you'd like to make, sometimes they find their way into a recording, go ahead and put those on email to me. I'll either talk about it with you there or maybe the next recording. How about Isaiah 30? Here is the mention of the word Tophet or Topheth, verse 33 of chapter 30. For Topheth has long been ready. Now this has been a chapter about judgment, like so many of Isaiah's. Been a chapter about judgment, and Isaiah says Topheth has been ready. Indeed, it's been prepared for the king. He's made it deep and large, a pyre of fire with plenty of wood, the breath of the Lord, like a torrent of brimstone, sets it afire. What a picture is that? Something's going to be set on fire. Something that you and I perhaps need to know about. From the text we glean that it has been ready for a long time. It was prepared for a king. It's deep, it's large, it involves a stack of wood, and this wood will be set on fire simply by the Lord breathing on it. Serious. It's the only time Isaiah uses the term Tophet, but the writer of 2 Kings mentions it once, and Jeremiah talks of it in two chapters of his prophecy. Maybe we should know what it's about. The king's passage is about the reforms of Josiah. That's in chapter 23:10 of 2 Kings. Valuable information in 2 Kings. Tophet, right there, is in the Valley of Hinnom. Hinnom. In the New Testament, this is related to Gehenna. Gehenna of Hinnom. Same place. A word which we have translated hell, Gehenna. It lay south of Jerusalem, this Gehenna, or the Valley of Hinnom, and its perpetual burning of fires in Jesus' day, now a garbage dump and or still a place of burning human victims, that's in New Testament times, reminded Jesus of the place of punishment waiting for the devil. Nobody is saying that Gehenna, as it existed in Jesus' day, is hell. We're not saying that. We're saying that hell, it looks very much from the outside like Gehenna. It reminds you of Gehenna, the place of human execution, the place of burning of human bodies and all kinds of other garbage, a place where the odor would come up from the valley onto the hill, perhaps of Calvary itself, where Jesus could smell it as he was on his way to dying. It was a horrific death, and we don't often talk about the sense of smell that kicked in when he was there. But this is a place, this place of punishment, that looks like Gehenna, waiting for the devil, waiting for his angels and the devil's people. That's what we learn about it in Kings. The reforms of Josiah dealt with what was going on down there. God's people had picked up the ways of the pagans. What did the pagans do? Oh, they did all kinds of evil things. One thing they did was they allowed their children to pass through those fires of Tophet and other fires. It was a sacrifice to the god Molech. You want to please Molech? Take one of your children and let him just walk through. Push him into that fire. Let him walk through it till he's dead. Offer him a sacrifice to me, says Molech. That's the kind of god the pagans had. And from this we get the meaning of the name, the place of burning of dead children. A fit type of hell indeed. Josiah defiled this site, meaning he made it unavailable for such practices. He shut it down. It was after Isaiah's time, as Jeremiah was the prophet of the day at that time, probably assisting the young king, Josiah, in his zeal. And Josiah was the last of the zealous good kings. His children didn't turn out too well. A short interval of righteousness in his kingship that dawned on Israel because of a righteous leader. Get a good man in charge, you'll have a good nation. As the man, as the leader, so go the people quite often. Isaiah 31 is next. Looking at the whole chapter, I'm looking for clues all the time as to when this prophecy was fulfilled. Or was it? I don't mean to sound like a broken record here, but if we're going to be literal with Isaiah's text, and we are, meaning me, we're going to have to assume that this prophecy about Egypt is in the future still. Definitely was in the future, big time future in Isaiah's day. Why? Because in verse 5 it talks about, like flying birds, the Lord will protect Jerusalem. Didn't say by flying birds. I don't know how that would work. But like flying birds, something that flies will be in the sky. That's a no-brainer for us. It was not a no-brainer for Isaiah and the people after him and after him and long after him. Well into our time, things didn't fly in the sky unless they were birds. Seems to refer to armed aircraft of the modern era. Verse 7, all the gold and silver idols will be thrown out. Has that happened? I don't think so. I don't think so, because Jesus will come to Mount Zion. Has that happened? No. Hasn't happened. That's in verse 4. See, that's not conclusive. More like that six-day war that we've already experienced, possibly. Possibly, as long as you don't have to spiritualize anything in the text. That is, turn it into something non-literal because you kind of like it and it feels good when you read it. No, don't do that to the Bible. Don't do that to God's Word. Well, I'll do one more little one here. One more little one. I mean, this is very little. Isaiah 32, verses 1 to 8. Who is the king that's prophesied here? Behold, a king will reign righteously, and princes will rule justly. You put that together with Psalm 45, it would seem that Isaiah is seeing Jesus here. A righteous reign, coupled with no blind eyes and no deaf ears, no sick minds, no stammering tongues, no more elevation of fools. That alone tells me it's not happened yet. A perfect world. A a perfect world is with a perfect king is Isaiah 32, at least that first part. That's the millennial king. That's Jesus. All right. Thank you so much for being here with us today. Don't forget to check in to this site from time to time and see what's going on here. I do different things, different times, different days, and you just never know exactly what's going to be here. But if you don't see something new on a given day, which would be rare, there's so much that's there that's old, but it's good. Go back and check out the prophecy studies, the series on North Korea, the different books I've written, the Bible commentaries, the situation of the church. It's all here. Go browsing and you'll find some things that I think will bless your life. Thank you for being with me today. We'll see you again soon at Hackberry House of Chosun website, sermonaudio.com.